This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you tonight from our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and those of you tuning in to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to 60 former jockeys who have suffered devastating on-track injuries. If you are able to help, please visit the website pdjf.org. So our guest tonight has consistently ranked among the top 100 jockeys in earnings and wins over the past 16 years. He's been riding all over the country for more than 30 years, and he's still going strong. He ranks 42nd among North American jockeys with 4,548 wins, over $56 million in earnings. Scott Spieth, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Scott,
it's a pleasure to do the interview.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to join us today. And Scott, let's tune in our listeners and update them on what you're doing these days.
Currently, I'm based out of Delaware Park, so I do Delaware Park during the summer. Race local tracks around here as well. In the wintertime, I go down to Tampa, and it's just a nice fit for the two meets. One ends in May and the other starts in May. So, and like I said, in the fall, then we are down here on October 15th, and we start racing in Tampa shortly after Thanksgiving. I believe it's November 26th.
Scott, I rode at both tracks, and I got to say, Tampa is very nice in the winter. You get to stay warm, so that's a very good decision.
Yes, for sure. I did the cold weather tracks for a lot of years. You can make more money up north. A little bit older in my career now, and I prefer to stay warm and enjoy my time in the winter.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned, you're riding at Delaware, and there are so many tracks in that general area. Do you travel a lot? Do you ship a lot to ride horses around outside tracks?
Yeah, I don't ship as much as I used to, but I still travel locally. Like I said, Parks is approximately an hour away. Laurel is about an hour away. Monmouth, Meadowlands, Penn Nationals, just shy of 2 hours from here. So you get a lot of tracks that you can ride at, and I go when I think I can win.
Is this your first meet at Delaware?
Second
meet.
Yeah. Yes, I moved down here last year. I had been racing up in Presque Isle. It was my major track during the summertime. And I moved down here. My girlfriend's down here. She trains, and so I moved down here. It was easier for me to move down here than her to move or string up, that location. So
sure. What do you think of Delaware Park?
I really enjoy it. It's a good track. It's a safe track to ride on. Decent turf course. Like I said, the opportunity to go to different tracks is what's enticing about it, because you have availability to ride it so many tracks, and so I really enjoy it here.
That's definitely true, Scott, and I also rode at Delaware, and actually I shared the girls' room there with a name you might be familiar with, Kristen Swan.
Oh yeah, that's my eldest daughter.
Yes.
So Kirsten's out here, and that's so nice to be around her, because she left the Cleveland area maybe when she was about 20, And so she's now 26, and so I've got a lot of, spend a lot of time with her and watch her ride out here. She loves to ride those Arabians, so she has a lot of fun with it.
Have you ever ridden an Arabian, Scott?
Yes. Actually, in my younger days, I rode quarter horse track, which was a mixed meet up in Mount Pleasant Meadows in Michigan. And so I rode Arabians, Appaloosas, quarter horses, thoroughbreds, you name it, we rode it there,
Wow.
So that's going back a lot of years. Yeah, and I actually have ridden a few here this meet. I won two Arabian races here for Guy Smith.
What's the main difference, other than being slower and a little bit smaller, what's the main difference between riding a thoroughbred and an Arabian?
You can ride a thoroughbred a little more aggressively. On Arabian, they're more temperamental. So just because you're riding them harder, lots of times they're refusing more. So you actually have to let them think it's their idea and get along with them more. So that's probably the biggest thing with them.
A little bit trickier.
Yes. A lot of people call them crazy and dumb, and actually I think they're just a little bit smarter, and so they're thinking ahead, So you, like I said, if you can get them to want to do it, you're way ahead of the game.
Scott, you mentioned Michigan, and in your younger days, you rode Arabians, quarter horses, Appaloosas, you name it. Let's go back. Let's take a look at how you first got involved with the sport, and I guess you grew up in Michigan.
I grew up in Michigan. I've been on a horse farm all my life. I started barrel racing when I was like 5 years old. So we came up with horses, grew up with horses, and it was just part of life. My older brother wanted to become a trainer. My older brother, Tony Steep, he wanted to become a trainer when I was, maybe 11 or 12. He was 3 years older than me, and so he started working on the track. Next thing you know, I'm galloping on the track when I'm 13 years old.
Oh.
It was a paramutual track. It was a small quarter horse track, Glendale Downs in Hillsdale, Michigan. So it was close to where I grew up, and so I started galloping then. I was doing it just during the summer, obviously, but by the time I was 15, that fall, I rode my first race.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So young, Scott. I don't know what I was doing at 15, but it wasn't riding in a professional race, that's for sure. But you mentioned barrel racing, and
yes.
Did you do pretty well with that?
Oh, yes. We did quite well. My father was, very competitive, and so naturally we had to go out and get some fast horses. Typically, we got them off the racetrack and made them into barrel horses, and so that's how I got my start. I think when I was 11, I won the state in Michigan for barrels, poles, and kegs, I think we ran back then. And after that, like I said, I was pretty much on the racetrack by the time I was 13, galloping during the summer. But we still went to barrel shows occasionally, but we got very much more involved in the racing industry.
So you basically grew up around horses, and that had to help. I mean, did you spend a lot of time in the barn and hands-on with the horses, and that had to help riding?
Oh, yes. Growing up, I would say we always had 10 to 15 horses on the farm at all times. And lots of times, my older brother and I, we would take horses in to break. I was the one that rode them, and he did the groundwork, and I was probably doing that by the time I was age 11, 12. So I was the guinea pig that got on their back, and he was the one to get them ground broken. So, we just did it during the summer, for a little extra money. So I've been with horses all my life, and it's just part of my life. Did it through high school, did it through college, and still doing it. So
still doing it, Scott, still doing it. And then you started galloping quarter horses at a very young age, and how was that transition to go from riding barrel racing and pole bending and things like that? How was that transition to galloping horses?
There wasn't much difference as far as, riding the actual horse, because, like I said, I grew up with them, so one horse you can relate to another, and I've been on so many horses. But, learned some of the techniques early on. I had a couple of riders that were actually riding, and I was only 13, so they taught me a little bit more on, how to gallop a horse, how to hold a horse, and all that. So You know, Ronnie Louchart was one of the first I worked around, and at that time I was probably galloping 20 horses a morning. So, and like I said, it was a small paramutra track. You'd almost call it a bush track because there weren't outriders. There wasn't anybody there. You know, there was pretty much, you had the rein of the track all morning till early afternoon. So to get 20 out in a day was no big deal.
20? Wow, I've never in my life got 20 horses in a day. That's that'll get you fit fast.
And well, like I said, I grew up playing sports. I was very athletic. And as a young kid, you can pretty much do anything. And so that's just how I transitioned over.
Did you ever, Scott, did you ever think about doing anything else when you were young and growing up playing sports? Did you ever think about anything other than riding?
Actually, riding was kind of on the back burner. I pretty much played sports. I was academically inclined. I had a full-ride scholarship at the University of Michigan, went there pre-med, and just thought I was going to ride the horses for, you know, a summer job. And that's pretty much what I had been doing. And my senior year at U of M, they didn't offer a class I needed in the spring. And so I called a trainer I'd been riding for, quarter horses. He had quarter horses and thoroughbreds, and asked him if he minded if I came down to Ladbroke GRC and rode his thoroughbreds. And he asked me if I could make the weight, which was not a problem for me. And that's how I got into the thoroughbreds.
Wow, that's a big difference to have a full ride scholarship to University of Michigan, and then you go and ride races. That's a big difference. That's a big difference. And what was the, speaking of differences, what was the biggest difference between riding quarter horses and thoroughbreds?
The speed, obviously. Quarter horses are much quicker, but for a shorter distance. So the gates were a big difference. The thoroughbreds are much calmer, much quieter. If you rode, like for me, for instance, if I was riding 8 races with quarter horses in a day, I could expect 6 of them trying to flip in the gate.
Wow.
You know, where at thoroughbreds, it's not that. We used flipping rigs on the quarter horses, which tied them to the front so they couldn't turn over or flip upside down. That's one thing you use in the quarter horses you don't use in the thoroughbreds. But other than that, I had ridden a mixed meet at the quarter horse meet. So I had ridden thoroughbreds. I had ridden Appaloosas, which go long. The Arabians go long. So you learn a sense of pace, and that's the biggest probably transition. You know, quarter horses are pretty much sprint all out for as far as they can go. Thoroughbreds, you have to pace, and you have to learn the pace and know it, you know.
How hard was that for you to develop that clock in your head?
I don't think it was that difficult. I got lucky early in my career where I got underneath a few trainers. The actual trainer that allowed me to come down to DRC was Richard Rotelli. And he had been around thoroughbreds all his life. He just had both. He had quarter horse and thoroughbreds. And so I think he mentored me quite a bit on learning pace, time, and econs. And he actually was riding races till he was, I think almost 70. He was still riding his quarter horses. But early in my career, we worked horses together, so he was always working with me. And I think that just came along with a lot of assistance from him.
Would you say he was your biggest mentor when you were learning how to
ride? He was probably my biggest mentor starting into the thoroughbreds, because he was my primary trainer for the first couple years of riding the thoroughbreds.
Jockey Scott Spieth joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Scott, you started riding thoroughbreds, and tell us where your journey went on from there.
I started out at DRC. I rode there for approximately 10, 12 years, something like that. That was the major track in Michigan, and it was local, which was nice. The second winter, I went down to Tampa for 2 years, so I was down there just in the wintertime. And Tampa Bay Downs was, you know, a nice, cheap track, but warm weather at that time. But there wasn't a lot of money in there for the connections you could make wasn't really great to bring business back to Detroit. So then I started doing the Turfway, back when Turfway actually had decent money. and made a lot of Kentucky connections there, which was advantageous for, you know, my future career. But I did that, I couldn't tell you how many years. You're going back a long ways now, because I did that in the 90s. So I would say from 92 to maybe 96 or 7, something
okay.
like that,
okay.
I did the winters in Turfway. Which, like I said, for my career, that I proven to be very advantageous, because you got a lot of connections with your Kentucky outfits, typically better horses out of Kentucky. And so anytime they'd ship to a track I was at, they knew me, they knew my name, and it always helped in my business.
Of course, absolutely. Was Turfway still dirt at that point?
Yes.
Have you ridden there since they've switched over?
Yeah, I actually rode there the first year they put it in. I don't remember what year that was when they put the poly in. And back then it was it was a nice track when they first put the poly in. It had a lot of cushion to it and a little bounce to it. I rode there after, I don't know, maybe 7, 8, 9 years. I don't even know how many it was. But then it became very gritty and didn't have that cushion or bounce to it anymore. So I've actually ridden when they first put it down and then quite a few years later. And like I said, that poly track to me had lost a lot of its cushion.
Wow. Well, why do you think that is? Just wear and tear?
I think because I rode on the Chipita up at Presque Isle, and they constantly had to add fibers to that. And I don't know if Turfway, well, obviously it wasn't Chipita, it was a different poly.
Right.
But I don't think they added the additional materials required. That's was my guesstimate on that. Like I said, I don't know the expense on it or anything else, but that's what it looked like. It looked like it just broke down and gotten very gritty. Almost came back like a pea gravel on it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What is your opinion on Polytrack Tapeta overall? I hear a lot of different opinions on that, and I've ridden at Turfway maybe once or twice, so I don't really have a good basis to go off of. What's your opinion on that?
I enjoy riding on the poly track. When I say that, I like the Tapeta track. I've got a chance to ride on it at Keeneland, as well as Presque Isle. Great as far as it seems like the horses get over it really well. Seems like it has good cushion to it. I have heard trainers say it creates some hind end problems, things like that. But as far as a rider, I really enjoyed riding on it. The only downfall from being a rider was if you come off your horse, you hit and you stick.
Yeah.
So injury is much greater than on a dirt where you'll hit the ground and actually slide.
Right.
For some reason, that track actually grabs you and, like I said, you pretty much hit and stick to it. And so the actual fall is usually pretty hard.
How about turf horses running on the Tapeta or poly track? Do they seem to get over that easier?
They seem to handle it better than if you've got a true turf horse. It seems like they handle the synthetic tracks much better. Off handicapping, that's even how I'll handicap a race horse coming off the turf. I'll get better numbers on the synthetic than I will a dirt horse. Dirt horse, you have to see if they'll take to it or not.
You mentioned handicapping, Scott. So do you spend a lot of time before a race in the room, maybe perhaps, or watching replays or studying the form, or how do you prep for a race?
Well, here's my routine. I always go through the races the night before and watch any replays I want to watch, particularly on my horses, but maybe even horses in the race. And so that way I have a good idea of what's going to happen the next day. So I do it the night before. Then when I go to the room the next day, I've already done my homework, and all I have to do is look over my notes, and everything's fresh. I try not to get a day in front. I always do the night before of the next day's races.
That makes sense. Do you ever seek out, maybe you're riding a horse for the first time, and do you ever talk to the riders who rode that horse previously, or is that, you know, it's obviously a competitive atmosphere there in the jocks room. Is that something you really don't do?
I would say it depends on the person who rode the horse before. It just depends on how good of friends you are with them, or, you know what I mean, how you guys get along and give information or don't give information. So, and some people you're going to get information from, or they may come up to you without even asking. Right. And you'll take it with a grain of salt. You know, it's just either you take it or you don't. And, you know, like I said, I've already done my homework the night before. So it might add to what I think in the race or as far as how I look at the race. But pretty much I've done the homework the night before.
Say that same situation, Scott. You're named on a horse you've never sat on before. Do you maybe seek out in the morning to go try to get on that horse in the morning?
No, not particularly. I've ridden so many horses over the years. I usually, one horse will relate to another one I've ridden, or just my instincts on horses. I've been doing it, like I said, since I was a kid. And so pretty much they don't throw too much at me that I haven't seen before.
Jockey Scott Spieth joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Scott, let's back up a little bit. We stopped where we left off. You rode at Turfway Park for several years, and you went to Tampa. And where did you go from Turfway? Did you ship around to Churchill, Keeneland, the Kentucky tracks?
No, pretty much at Turfway, I would go for the winter meet because Detroit at that time, they opened up the 1st of March, and we ran till the 1st of December. So from there, I'd head to Turfway, race December, January, February. By March, I'd be back in Detroit. It wasn't until I quit going to Turfway when I moved to Cleveland. DRC closed down 1998, I think. And 1999, I moved to Cleveland. So when I moved to Thistle Downs area and was racing there, then in the winters, I would go to Mountaineer. And in fact, I started riding both tracks for quite a few years. I think I rode during the day at Thistle and night at Mountaineer for like 8 consecutive years.
You mentioned that DRC closed in 1998, Scott, and that had to be sad for you, given the fact that you rode there for so many years, and that was your local track, really, when you grew up. And I don't know a lot about DRC. What was the reasoning behind that, and how did you feel about that?
It was a big transition because I had two homes at the time up in Michigan, and so I had to find somewhere that ran long enough to get the kids in school and all of that. So when I moved, I went down to Cleveland that fall and got hooked up with an agent there, which had Mike Rowland. And so he had the top rider there, and Mike Greenfield was the agent. And so I hooked up with him, did the fall meet like maybe a month, and decided to make the move. So it turned out really well. It definitely was a transition. I hated to see DRC close down, but it opened up, you know, new paths for me because then instead of just being based out of Michigan, I started doing more racing, you know. Ohio has more tracks. I mean, Ohio had 3 tracks at that time, which they do now, but they had Thistle, Beulah, and River Downs. And, you know, like I said, then I started racing other places as well. So it just opened up a new path for me.
Scott, you mentioned kids. You had to move your kids to different schools whenever you had to make the move.
Yeah, at that time we had 3, and Kirsten being the oldest, then Austin, and Victoria, which Victoria was born in 1999 in January. And we moved to Cleveland shortly after that.
Okay. Okay. And did they show interest in what you did for a living? Did they show interest in horses from the very beginning?
Kirsten did. She's been riding since she was really little. So that was, you know, she just was involved in horses. And Austin, not so much, but he would work around the horses. But that wasn't his interest. It had to have an engine for him to be interested. And then at that time, Tori, she was a little bit with the horses, but it wasn't something she loved. She loved the racing, loved to come to the races and all that, but to actually ride or be interested in being a jockey, not at all.
That had to be tough if you were shipping around a Mountaineer, you mentioned, and Thistle Downs, and to have kids at home. That had to be tough.
Yeah, it was a lot of hours because you didn't start racing until 7 o'clock at night at Mountaineer, and you get typically home by 1 in the morning. So that was average time I'd get home. At that time, I had it worked out with my trainers that I rode for. Rarely did I go out in the morning to work horses. Maybe once or twice a week at the most to go out there in the mornings because, like I said, I was racing Cleveland first. That started around noon or 12:30, and then I wouldn't get home till 1 o'clock at night from Mountaineer. So getting up with the kids and actually having some time with them in the morning, that was, you know, a good thing for me. And my ex-wife at that time, you know, she'd go out and gallop horses in the morning at the track, so it left me home with the kids, which worked out good.
Worked out very well. That's good because that's a long day, riding day and night.
And night, yes. And it typically was 6 days a week because Cleveland and Mountaineer, both, they ran 5 days, but the one day overlapped a little bit, you know, where we didn't race one place, but I raced another, so...
How were those racetracks at the time you were riding, Cleveland and Mountaineer? What did you think when you first arrived?
I really enjoyed riding Cleveland's track. Very nice track to ride on. The money was okay. It was a mid-level track. At that time, Mountaineer just got the slots and was really, you know, an up-and-coming track. So the money was better in Mountaineer. But Mountaineer is a very tough track to ride. The track surface is very touchy, let's put it that way. So, you know, you had to make sure what you're riding at Mountaineer because, like I said, the chance of accident was much higher at Mountaineer just because it's the surface.
Right, right. Who were the main trainers you rode for at those tracks, or did you basically ride for pretty much everyone?
Well, pretty much everyone, but my main outfit was Jeff Radosovich, which has been leading trainer in Cleveland for quite a few years now. He had road races before, was leading rider there in Ohio and Cleveland, and had transitioned over to being a trainer. You know, he had to fight the weight too much, and he's been trained. I couldn't tell you how many years he's been training, but since I was there, probably, so since maybe 98, something like that, and shortly after I got there, he built his business up, and we hooked up, and he's been leading trainer there for years and years. So it was kind of hard to come to Delaware because of that reason, because he and I had so much success in so many years, you know, leading rider, leading trainer, and we just worked well together.
We will continue our visit with jockey Scott Spieth after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
This is Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I am Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Scott Spieth. Scott, Right before we went to break, you were talking about riding for the leading trainer at Mountaineer and in Ohio. And I wanted to ask you, you said that he was previously a jockey and then turned to training when he had difficulties with his weight. I wanted to ask you, is it easier to ride for a trainer who's ridden previously?
Typically, I would say yes, because they actually see what happens in the race and have a good idea about it. On the other hand, it can be more difficult because they see things other trainers don't. So, you know, that can be good and bad. But for this trainer, like I said, Jeff, he understood, you know, it really doesn't go perfect every trip, and you do the best of what you got to work with. And but for me, it was really great to ride for him because he understood so much more as far as, like, what I was looking at in the race, and you only have a split second to make a decision.
Exactly. They know exactly what you're going through.
Exactly. They've been there and done it.
Right. So. Scott, would you ever go to training whenever you retire many, many years down the road?
No, I don't really have any interest in that. To me, if I was when I'm done with my career, I think I may be an agent or something like that, or maybe even a steward.
Yeah.
You have been approached by many different people on that aspect of it. And I think that's what I'd prefer to do. The training, a lot of hours, and I see what goes on with that every day. And for me, I think I have enough connections in my business and present myself well enough to, you know, an agent. I think that's a great job. I mean, it's got highs and lows like any of our jobs do, but I think that's a good avenue, or like I said, it's possible even to be a steward.
I was going to say, Scott, the agents, they don't always have an easy job. That is a tough job at times. You have to be, I guess, kind of a scapegoat at times and, you know, deal with the politics of the industry. But you meant talking about agents. How important is it for a rider to have a good agent?
It's very important to have a good agent and to be able to work with the agent and the rider, have a good relationship where they both kind of know what the other expects, or even, you know, where they want to go with their business. So there's not conflicts there. Biggest thing is, like you said, sometimes the agent has to be the scapegoat where they're going to take the heat, even though it's to protect the rider. So that is one thing that, you know, that is very tough on the agent. Another is for an agent to work himself out of a situation where he's got a couple of trainers want to go in the same race, and you got to keep them both happy. Sometimes that becomes very difficult because you don't want to upset the trainer where then they're just like, I don't want to ride you anymore. So, you know, the agenting job is not the easiest, I agree. But like I said, it's basically being able to work with people. And to me, being honest with the trainers up front is a lot easier than trying to sneak around them, because the truth usually comes out.
That's right. That's right. It definitely does. Definitely does. And Scott, I actually spoke with your current agent now to get you on the show here tonight, and he was extremely courteous. And tell me about your relationship with him.
Oh, John and I have a good relationship. Like I said, we started working together last year. I came down here to Delaware, and I came down without an agent. He knew me from the Ohio track since he was originally from Cincinnati. And so he knew my name, knew I'd done well in the past. And he happened to come back here after quite a few years of being out of the business. He wasn't aging. And so just by chance, we both came back to Delaware at the same time. He called me up, and we started just working out on a trial basis. You know, that's how we started. And like I said, we've worked well together, and we've got a good mutual friend, Sean Jones, which used to ride as well. And he's my valet now there at Delaware. And he kind of put us together, and so it's worked out really well.
I would definitely say a good team, given all the success you've had at Delaware. And Scott, let's briefly go back. However, we did stop at your riding Cleveland Mountaineer, and before coming on air, I asked you how many riding titles you've won, and please share your answer with the audience.
I'm not sure. I really couldn't guess on what that is. I know at one point they said I had won 13 consecutive at Thistle Downs, which there's, I believe there was three, maybe four meets at Thistle Downs. I think there was three. So, but that was consecutive. And so I don't know how many overall titles I won there because, like I said, they have different meets at the every year at Thistle Downs. So there was quite a few years where I was leading rider.
So they've definitely racked up. And, Scott, following the Cleveland Mountaineer circuit, where did you go from there?
I ended up moving over to Presque Isle when they opened up, and I'm not sure what year that was. They opened up for a 30-day meet in September, and the purses were astronomical because it was a 30-day meet. They had collected all the money from the slots that first year and then put on a 30-day meet. I remember the maiden special weight was $75,000.
Wow.
So that kind of tells you what I know. I won a $50,000 claiming race, and the pot was $90,000. And so the purses were huge. And after going there for that meet, I don't remember where I ended up, third, fourth, somewhere there as far as overall in that meet. And that's when I moved my tack that next spring to Presque Isle.
Scott, why?
Yeah, I rode there for quite a few years and had great success. I believe at this point I'm still the most wins at Presque Isle, and I haven't been there in 2 years, I believe. I was told that was the last time I was there, which I'm not sure.
Wow. That is quite the accomplishment, quite the accomplishment. Why did the, first of all, the purses, like you mentioned, were so incredibly huge, and why do we not see that anymore?
Well, the Presque Isle, when they first opened, like I said, it was only a 30-day meet. And so they had the whole year, all the purses had accumulated, they had to give it away in 30-day meet. Now, after that, next year, I believe the purse for a maiden special weight, for example, was around 32 or something like that. And they've fallen off a bit since then. But I believe the state was taking money out for... when I say taking out, took money away from the purse allocation, mm-hmm. and I believe it was to go towards workman's comp or something like that. So you've seen a decrease in the purses at Presque Isle.
Sure, definitely. Definitely. Now, in regards to these smaller tracks, we've seen lately, you know, the closing of a few Suffolk Downs, and we talked about DRC earlier. And what do you think? Do you think casinos are the way to go, or what do you think is important for the survival of these smaller tracks?
Well, definitely, I see the casino being helping in the purse structure, and where you have the purses, you're going to get the better horses, and you're going to get more trainers as well as, you know, bigger fields. People willing to run for that kind of money. So the casinos have helped out quite a bit. The only problem with that is it seems like every state has tried to include them now. So when you get that many casinos around, it, you know, it's eventually going to die out somewhat. Just too many venues. So to me, what I see for the future, I see a few less tracks, and I won't say a bunch, but a few less, where they're going to survive and you know, become pure tracks to race at.
Joggy Scott Spieth joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Scott, you rode at Presque Isle, and you did extremely well. As you mentioned, you still hold the record, as far as you know, for most wins at Presque Isle. And how was it riding there, and how did you come about finding such success?
Well, I had an agent up there. His name was Steve Hayes, and we had worked together quite a few years at that point because we had worked in Cleveland for I couldn't tell you how many years now, but we did quite well, and a lot of the Cleveland people came over, a lot of Kentucky outfits that either I had connections with, or he had connections with, came to Presque Isle, and then we built it from there. It turned out really good meet. It is only an hour and a half from Cleveland, from Thistle Downs, approximately hour and a half from, probably 2 hours from Mountaineer. So you had a lot of those horses that were coming up there or outfits shipping to there to race, as well as Penn National. So there was a lot of people that I had known for years or raced for, and so it turned out to be a really good meet for us.
That's the beautiful thing about the industry. It's such a small world in a way. You know, you go to different tracks and you know people that you knew from years ago, and it's an incredibly small world. I will tell you that.
It is amazing. Just like here, I'm at Delaware Park, and Gerald Bennett, he's racing here. And back when we were in Detroit, I used to ride all his horses in Detroit.
Wow.
So it's just, you never know who's going to go where. But it's funny how many people you run into that you've known for years or hadn't seen in years and used to work with. So it is a small world.
Indeed. That is definitely true. You mentioned Jerry Bennett. I know him from Tampa. And speaking of Tampa, Scott, I wanted to mention you won your 4,500th career win at Tampa for your girlfriend, actually.
Yes, I did. We won on Awesome Indeed was the horse's name. So that was nice to get that. I'm still looking for the 5,000. I want to get to the 5,000 in a few more years, and I'll get there. But I definitely want the 5,000 under my belt.
Oh, definitely. And not too many jockeys have reached 5,000 wins. Actually, only 31 in history. So that is quite the accomplishment. And 4,500 is quite the accomplishment. Scott, and how did it feel when you crossed the wire in front? And again, what a great connection to the horse. But how did it feel when you crossed that wire?
Enjoyable like any other milestone. I really enjoyed it. But to me, it wasn't like for the 4,000, that was a bigger goal for me to get over the 4,000. The 4,500 is, I didn't recognize any of my wins till I got up to like 2,000 or something.
Wow.
So I never had any plaques or all that, like, you know, you see nowadays where somebody gets their 1,000th win. I never celebrated 1,000, 1,500. I'm not even sure I celebrated 2,000. But I know 3,000 I celebrated at Cleveland, and the 4,000 I celebrated at Tampa, and then 4,500, they put a plaque on me there for the 4,500 at Tampa. So it felt good, and a lot of my friends were out in the winner's circle, so got a chance with my fellow riders that I've been riding with for years. And so it was a good feeling.
Looking back, Scott, when you first started riding, did you ever think you'd get to that point?
When I first started riding, I don't think I was planning this for my career. So I just thought it was a good paying job at the time and thought, you know, I'll just move on with my education. But it gets in your blood, and I'm very competitive. So it fits me as far as my core. I'm a very competitive person. I was growing up playing every sport there was. And so the racing was just, you know, an avenue to keep that competition flowing. You know, I love to compete. So
speaking of competing, I have to tell you, I read an article and it made me laugh, because you mentioned in the article that you definitely want to get to win number 5,000 because you want to beat Mark Guidry.
Oh, I got to get to 5,300 to get in front of Guidry. Yeah, Mark and I, we used to golf at Tampa all the time, and I actually spoke with him maybe about a month or two ago. And I had a laugh. I told him, I said, I just want one more than you. And he said, oh, dog, you'll get there. You know, you got to know Mark. He is fun. So,
well, the way you're going, Scott, you'll definitely get there. Mark better be worried. you might be passing him up pretty soon. And as I mentioned in the introduction, you already have 4,548 wins, and those are just rapidly growing. And it won't be long. You better watch out.
Yeah.
You better watch out. Jockey Scott Spieth joining me on Jock Talk tonight, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And Scott, tell me what you do for fun. I mean, I know obviously you're very busy and you've been traveling your entire life, riding at various racetracks around, but what do you do for fun?
I love to golf. I love golfing. Just something to get out and get away from things, enjoy that. That's one thing. There's so many different sports I enjoy. I mean, that's just been part of my life. I like playing cards. That's another thing I love to do. I like to play Texas Hold'em, you know, so having a casino close by, I enjoy going there and playing that. Cards are just a lot of fun. So There's a lot of things I enjoy doing. I used to, when I was in Ohio, I had a farm there, and we actually used to go out team penning with kids and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of fun. Just it's riding horses, which I love to do, but just in a different aspect. You know, it's not about the money or the purse. It's all about having fun and enjoying the animal.
I love that. And you obviously enjoy it if you were riding races day and night and then team penning for fun. So that just tells you right there how much you love it. And you really have to love it, Scott. Obviously, it's a dangerous game, and you know it's the only sport where an ambulance follows us around the track. How have you made out as far as injuries?
I've been very fortunate, knock on wood. I've had a few broken bones. When I say that, just ribs. I've never, no arms, hands, you know, nothing like that, legs. I've had a few broken ribs. Other than that, maybe a few lacerations. I had one on my head where I had to have 9 staples, but I was back riding a few days. I mean, I've been very fortunate. I've had some bad spills and fortunately walked away from all of them.
Thank goodness.
Yes.
It's a dangerous game, and I know sometimes it's especially hard when you're fighting weight, and you know, you seem to be prone to more injuries when you're weak and struggling so much with your weight. Do you struggle at all with your weight?
I've been very fortunate. When I graduated high school, I weighed probably 115 pounds. My senior year in college, I got up to approximately 128, and like I said, that's back then, drinking beer, eating pizza, you know, senior in college. And so I had to drop weight that first year to ride the thoroughbreds, approximately 15 pounds. And after that, I pretty much maintained that weight. I have very little trouble maintaining the weight. Pretty strict on my diet. And when I say strict, it's not, I can eat pretty much anything I want. I just don't eat the portions a lot of people eat, right. You know. So I don't deprive myself in any way, but it's been very easy for me. I don't hit the sauna like a lot of riders have to hit the sauna. It's been pretty easy for me overall.
That's great, because it's definitely one of the very tough things when you're, you know, especially it's more difficult when you're struggling with your weight so much. How tall are you, Scott?
I'm just shy of 5'7".
Oh, wow.
So yes, I'm one of the taller riders, like I said, but a very slender build. So I've been very fortunate as far as my build and, you know, the way I've been able to maintain the weight. It's not, like I said, it's not something that I have to fight with every day. I see a lot of riders who do have to fight it, and it's very difficult. You know, it you know, affects their body, affects their mood, and it makes it difficult, makes the job much tougher.
Exactly. Do you work out at all on top of obviously riding, you know, in the morning, galloping horses, working horses, and then in the afternoon as well? Do you work out maybe on your days off?
If you call golfing workout, then I guess yes.
I love it.
Outside of that, no, really, I don't. I'm a very active person, so it's not like I have a lot of downtime anyway, but to actually work out. When I was younger, I used to jog quite a bit. And that was to maintain the weight. But now, like I said, it's just become part of life. You know, after so many years, it's pretty easy to maintain the weight.
Well, you mentioned, Scott, how athletic you were when you were young and in high school. And you said you played all kinds of sports. But what sport in particular were you really good at in high school?
Well, the sport I probably was the best at was track and field. I was a pole vaulter. That was probably what I was the best at, but I was decent at all of them. I was a pitcher in baseball. I was a quarterback in the football team. So I pretty much played all sports. Basketball, as point guard. You know, I came from a small school, which is beneficial because everybody, you know, gets the opportunity. But I was captain of all 4 sports and had quite a bit of success playing them.
Natural athlete, obviously. And we talked before, Scott, about your daughter, Kirsten. As I mentioned, I know her well from riding at Delaware. I want to ask you, was it difficult for you when she told you that she wanted to ride? And obviously, you know the good and the bad about the industry, and it is dangerous. And was that tough for you see her go on and do that professionally, or were you completely supportive?
That didn't bother me too much. She was aware of the, you know, risks and that type of stuff. I mean, she had watched me race for quite a few years, and she had been around the industry. So she knew a little bit. There's quite a bit of risk. We had done the best we could with her, teaching her as much as we could. She actually worked on the track for my buddy Jeff Radosovich, which was a trainer at that time. And so she had hands-on not only with me and Rhonda, but also with Jeff. So she got a lot of different aspects of the industry and the racing. And so obviously no one's ready to ride their first race. You know, there's a lot of learning to do yet. But she knew enough, and she's a very good horseman. So I think she was prepared as much as we could prepare her, you know.
Do you think that's very important to be, as you mentioned, an all-around good horseman prior to riding races?
I think that's so important. Nowadays, you see so many riders come out of a jockey school or something like something pertaining to that. You know what I mean? Where they've actually been taught to ride, but they have no idea of the actual horse. And I think it's so important because you learn so much more about the anatomy as well as everything else pertaining to the horse, their dispositions and things that, you know, when you've grown up with horses, it's something you can't just teach. You know, it's years of personal experience.
Very well said, Scott. And do you think it also helps when you know exactly how much time and effort goes into getting these horses ready to run? And obviously, as a jockey, you only get, a minute and 12 seconds with the animal or whatever it might be. But do you think that's important to understand all of the work involved to actually, you know, get a horse ready to run?
I think it's beneficial for the riders who do know that, because they know the time and effort the trainer as well as the grooms have put into the horse. I mean, it's no different than after a race pulling a horse up. If you pull a horse up straight and do it as kind as you can, you're saving legs, you're saving extra work for your groom or your trainer, rather than if you're pulling them up and seesawing on them and you know, just too much twisting or whatever on the legs, it's uncalled for. So, you know, a good horseman knows how to take care of the horse even after the race, you know. And so if the riders knew that more, I think it would be beneficial for everyone. But I think it's very important.
Do you try to help out the younger riders in the room and give them that advice?
I would say somewhat, yes. I do help the younger riders. A lot of the younger riders, I just try to point and guide them in a lot of different aspects of the business. You know, like some riders aren't doing well at a track, try to point them at a track where I think they can get a start or get a better start, because once you start building your business, it's all about building your business and, you know, not burning bridges. The other aspect I try to help out with the younger riders is financial, because jockeys can make decent money, and if they're making decent money, they think it's going to be there forever, and that's not the case. So I try to help out the younger rider quite a bit.
You mentioned financial advice, Scott, and I have to chuckle because I wish you were a Delaware when I was riding there, because it's so true. And you know, as a 20-year-old kid, or however, you know, old these younger riders are when they first start out, it's such a shock when you maybe get your first paycheck after winning, you know, six races that week or whatever it might be.
Sure.
And then automatically you just, it's burning a hole in your pocket, and you want to go have fun. You want to go buy a new car.
Yeah. You assume it's going to last forever.
Right. Exactly. And it's so important. And where did you learn that yourself from?
I came up from a mid-class family, and I think my father was very conservative. My mother was more of the venturer, as far as, like, you know, she's into real estate now and things like that. I think my father was very conservative, and so overall it's just part of, you know, you grow up with that lifestyle and you learn to respect, you know, the money you're making, so...
No, that's definitely very, very important. And as I mentioned, you don't see that too often, really. You know, a lot of the younger riders don't know how to deal with it, how to manage money, and it's definitely important, Scott. And we only have a few minutes left. I can't believe how fast this show is flying by, Scott. It's been so great having you here. I want to ask you, what are your future goals? Obviously, we've already talked about win number 5,000, but what other goals do you still have?
Oh, I'm not real sure as far as goals. Like I said, I want to get to the 5,000, that's for sure. I would definitely, as far as like Aldana and her business, I want to help her grow her business because right now she's got maybe 20 horses, and so that's kind of, we've taken that on together somewhat where, you know, I'd like to see her branch out and get more owners and, you know, move on with that part of the industry. We definitely, as a joint, I would like to get some, you know, really stake horses involved in the barn. So that's something that is a goal, I think, mutually of ours. But as far as my ride, obviously you'd like to get to the big three at some point. I did get the chance to ride the Florida Derby this spring for Ron Pellucci, Luch Racing Stables. And he's been a big supporter of mine over the years. And so, like I said, it would be great to get to one of those races. Never had the chance to ride any of the big three.
Well, Scott, we are wishing you all of the best and good luck going forward. Scott, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Christina.
You missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time for another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.